All right. Well, thank you for coming. And for those of you watching online, thank you for downloading. Please don't post it to YouTube. So I'm going to be talking about valency effects, effects of valency on unsupervised dependency grammar induction. So first, I'm going to talk about the task. What do I mean by unsupervised dependency grammar induction? I'm going to talk about some of the previous work that's been done on this. Then I'm going to talk about what I mean by valency for the scope of this talk. And basically what we're going to do is we have some statistics which we compute over true data, over tree banks, and we're going to use these statistics to inform the creation of our model. So that's the model, that's the next section. Then we're going to evaluate it, and then we're going to conclude. So basically the thing that we're trying to get here is syntax. We want to get basic syntax of text. Syntax is very useful for many applications in NLP, but most parsers these days are statistical and they're trained on large amounts of corpora. And I think people here know better than most people that annotating these corpora is very time consuming. It takes a lot of work to do it. It's very hard to do. So we're looking for some sort of automated technique, especially for languages where we don't have any corpora at all, so languages that are less well known. So what we'd like to do is we'd like some sort of procedure which takes unlabeled text, just raw words, and we'd like to get from that the structure of those texts. And I have here dependency trees. That's the specific type of structure that we're going to be trying to uncover. But really what we want is text and get out either a grammar or these trees directly. If we have the grammar, then we can apply that to the text, and then we have the trees, so the end result is the same. So here's an example. Let's say we have this sentence, some people wear bow ties, and we have a lot of other sentences like it. And then below the sentence, I've shown the Penn tree bank. Bow tie is a special type of, this is a normal tie, and bow tie goes out like this. And this is something of an inside joke, is Eugene wears bow ties a lot, and it's sort of the symbol of our research group. So there's a lot of examples in this talk about bow ties. So I have this sentence, some people wear bow ties, and the corresponding tags from the Penn tree bank. So this is a determiner, plural noun, verb, plural noun. And let's say we've given our system a whole bunch of sentences like this. What we would like to get out is a structure that kind of like this. For each sentence, we want a dependency graph. So I've got the root node, which is the virtual head, virtual node. It points to the head of the sentence, which is where. And where takes two arguments. One is people, and the other is bow ties. So people is the subject of the sentence. Bow ties is the object. And then people takes some of this determiner as an argument as well. Now, to actually do this task, where you have words and part of speech tags, or even if you just had words, turns out to be very tricky. So what we do instead is we're just going to use part of speech tags. So instead of a vocabulary size of 50,000 or something, we're going to have a vocabulary size of about 40. So this is a much simpler model. And it turns out that even this is still very hard. So we're going to just do short sentences, things that are up to 10 words, after we take out some punctuation marks, since those aren't annotated very consistently across corpora. And we're using the part of speech tags. So this is our task. We get a whole bunch of part of speech tags, and at the end, we just want to get a graph like this. And I know this is a little bit different from the dependency graph style that's used here, but I think it should be clear that something points to its argument or its child. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the previous approaches to this. Carol and Charniak, Urit, and Paskin all have pretty early versions of dependency inductions. And I'm not really going to get into them. Best way to learn about them is to look at Klein and Manning, 2004, because he reviews them a lot better. The takeaway message is that they're all three of them, even though a fair amount of work was put into them, actually don't break baseline. So there's basic baselines, which is left branching and right branching. The left branching, you assume everything is left branching. You always branch left, and right branching the other way around. And these early works don't actually perform better than the baseline. So you've put all this work in when you could have done better by doing this really simple procedure. And of course, it's a baseline, so it's really not very useful. If your model of syntax was just left branching, it wouldn't really tell you very much about what you want to know. So Klein and May, 2004, he has this dependency model with valence, or DMV, and this is actually the first work which did beat the baselines. So his work is significantly higher than the baseline for various languages. And it's the main goal of this work is that we're going to take his model and we're going to look at various extensions to it. So I'm going to be talking a lot about it in the upcoming slides. And then the other thing I should mention is Smith and Eisner, 2006, where they basically proposed some new procedures for estimating the parameters of the dependency model with valence. Their techniques are minimally supervised. That is, they need some amount of labeled data, a very small amount, but they still need some to tune various hyperparameters. So as such, they're not actually unsupervised. So we won't actually compare with them because I believe they're doing a different task. Okay, so the dependency model with valence, actually before I do that, let me just say, this is a generative head outward process. So this means that we're going to start at the root and we're gonna generate arguments, and then we're gonna generate one argument of the root, and then each argument is gonna generate its children in turn in an outward fashion. So a head picks its child, and then that child is itself a head and will generate its arguments in the same way. And the way we do this is by first going left. We can arbitrarily decide that we're gonna go left and then right. So we say, which arguments do we take in the leftward direction? And when we're done making arguments in that direction, we're going to generate a bogus symbol, a fake symbol called stop, which just means we're done. And that means now it's time to go right. So now we're gonna generate arguments in the rightward direction until we generate a stop. And then when we've done that, when we're finished with that, we're done. And then we expand all the nodes in turn. So that probably sounds a little complicated. Here's an example. First, I'm gonna talk about the three probability distributions that are relevant in this model. So we've got P root, which is the probability that some word, or in our case, part of speech tag, is the head of the sentence. So we would want something like the probability of root of verbs to be very high. Verbs are usually the head. And something like adverbs to be very low. I don't think adverbs can really be a proper head. We also have P stop. This delta is the stop symbol. This is a symbol which means it's not a word, it just means we're not going to make any more words in this direction. And this distribution is conditioned on the head. What part of speech tag are we generating stop symbols for, or not generating? What direction are we going in? And have we made an attachment so far? So this thing here, Klein calls the adjacency bit, and this adjacency bit is the reason that his model is dependency model with valence and not just dependency model or something like that. So this thing can capture something about the number of arguments that a specific part of speech captures. So it knows that if a verb takes one argument to the left, then when you haven't made an attachment, then you have a high chance of not stopping. But after you have made an attachment, then you have a higher chance of stopping. So that would kind of gear it towards saying, you only take one argument to the left, i.e. the subject of the sentence. And then the last and maybe the most important distribution is P-arg, which is the probability of attaching something as an argument to a head. So if we're a verb, then we want, and we're going left, this is also conditioned on direction, then we also want to if we're a verb, we want there to be a pretty high probability of attaching to a noun when we're going left, right? If we're in English, a verb going left to the noun is going to indicate the subject of the sentence. Okay, so here's an example. We've got a virtual root node, and what we want to do is first pick the head of the sentence. So the sentence is, some people wear bow ties. So we've got where, and here's the probability of where. So the first thing we do is we go left, and we say, do we want to generate any arguments to the left? So this is the probability of not stopping, i.e. continuing and generating a word, given that we're where, we're going left, and we haven't made any arguments so far. Then we also have this probability of what is the probability that people is going to be the left attachment of where. Does this make sense? I should say at the beginning, please stop me if anything's in any way unclear, so I'm happy to fill in anything. So where is generated one argument, people, and now it's time, it now does the same thing again. It says, do I want to generate more arguments with p stop? And it turns out it generates this delta. It says, that's it. I'm no more arguments in this direction. So, and notice now that it's has arg. We have generated at least one argument in this direction, so it is a different distribution. So we're done going left. Now it's time to go right. And we do the same thing. We say, what is the probability of continuing given we're making a rightward attachment, and we haven't made any attachments so far. And then if that's the case, we're going right, and what's the probability of attaching to bow ties? So then we're going to do the same thing again, and this time we do stop, so we're not going to make any more arguments to the right. So now we're done expanding where. But we've got these two new words, people and bow ties, and they also need to be expanded. So I'll give an example for people. People says, I want to go left, and I haven't made any arguments in that direction, and I'm going to continue. I mean, I'm going to make an argument. So, and that argument is going to be some, given that we're people and we're going left. And then do we want to make any additional arguments? No, we don't want to make any arguments, given we're going left, and we've already made an argument. And now we go right, and we don't make any arguments in the right, going right. So if you continue this procedure for sum and bow ties, you get the structure that we want. And I haven't shown sum and bow ties because all they're going to do is generate stops in both directions. So they're not very interesting. A key part of all of this work, and by that I mean a lot of the early work and especially the dependency model with Vanity, is that a projective dependency graph can be thought of as a context-free tree. So these dependency grammars that we're dealing with actually have corresponding context-free grammars. So I've shown on the top the sentence with a dependency structure, and then on the bottom the context-free tree that's associated with it. So what you do is the internal nodes are actually going to be the same as the leaves, the bottom part of the tree, which is atypical for a constituency tree. Typically, these internal nodes are going to represent constituents. In our case, they're going to represent heads. So the fact that we have where here indicates that where is the head of bow ties. So this box corresponds to that arc. We have where goes to where bow ties, and that means make a right attachment. If it was where goes to bow ties where, if that was in the other order, then this would be the other way around. And as you've seen, we've arbitrarily decided that where goes left and makes people first, and then it goes right and makes bow ties, but the order doesn't really matter. They're independent, essentially. So what we do is we take all our data. We have some initial grammar, which basically allows for all possible attachments. And we have some initial rules on these, which I'm going to get back to. And we take this grammar, and we take this raw text, and now we can use inside-outside. Now, inside-outside is a procedure which you can use to find the most likely set of rules for a specific set of text and a specific grammar. Well, so I'm actually lying a little bit. It doesn't really find the most likely set of rules, but it's guaranteed to find rules that are at least as likely as what you had. It's a local search procedure, so all it's going to do is it's going to keep increasing the probability of this text under the rules until it can't get any better. But in fact, we know from experience that it almost never finds. It basically doesn't find a local maximum, a global maximum. It always finds local maxima, and they can sometimes be very bad. For this paper, we're going to, with the exception of those notes, we're going to basically treat inside-outside as a black box, and we're not going to really muck about in its internals. So we're just going to say it takes these things and it gives us these new rule probabilities for this context-free grammar. And we're going to take that grammar and we're going to parse with it, and that's how we're going to get our dependencies. And using this procedure to reverse context-free trees back to dependencies. Does that make sense? Okay. Okay, so now I'm going to talk a little bit about valency. I mean valency in the most general sense. I don't just mean it for verbs or anything like that. I mean what is the number and the type of arguments that something takes? And of course, in this paper, I do mean our words are part of speech tags, so it's a little weird in that respect, but it's going to work out. So here's a simple valency frame for give. You can say, I gave the book to Ed, or I gave Ed the book. In both cases, we take one argument to the left and two arguments to the right. The argument to the left is the subject. Argument to the right is the direct and indirect object. Sounds a little weird if you say, I gave the book, I gave to Ed, or I gave. There are contexts where these would make sense, but from a probabilistic standpoint, we want to say that these are rather unlikely. And in general, we'd like to learn that gave takes two arguments to the right and one argument to the left. As I said, we don't actually have gave, we just have verbs, and our tag set in English doesn't actually distinguish between ditransitive and intransitive and transitive verbs. So what we're really hoping to get out of this is that it's some sort of aggregate over parts of speech. So we'd like to learn, in general, verbs take one argument to the left, and there's some distribution over the number of arguments they take to the right, which would just correspond to whatever happens most frequently in the actual corpus. So what we did was we counted all the arguments in various languages, and we want to know, how often does a head take a certain number of arguments? And we count them in this way. We group first by direction. So we say that gave takes one argument to the left and two arguments to the right. We don't say it takes three arguments. It contributes one count here and that one there. And after that, we actually want to ignore direction because some languages are more left-headed than right-headed and vice versa. And we want to basically integrate out that bias. We want to ignore that. So we're just going to be looking at the totals. So what we did was we ran over these seven languages from Connell 2006. We looked at the gold data, the true data, and we count how often heads take a certain number of arguments, 0, 1, 2, or 3 or more. And I think there's a couple interesting things about this data. It looks like a lot of numbers, but the takeaway message is that these things are actually fairly similar across languages. We always see the highest number in 1, then in 0, then in 2, and then in 3+. Also, within each row, we're seeing a very small standard deviation. So these numbers tend to be more or less the same. The spread in these rows columns is usually about 10%. And in the case of the last one, it's a lot smaller. So these things are pretty much the same across languages. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Regardless of the type of relation. Yeah, right. So there's always a relation on an edge, and you notice my edges are always unlabeled. The main reason for that is that it's hard enough to even get the unlabeled edges correctly, let alone what the labels should be. we are learning a very basic type of syntax, and the statistics I'm computing here kind of adhere to that simple model. So the other thing to notice is that very little of the mass is in the 3+ column on average, about 3%. And what this means is that 97% of the time, a head only takes 0, 1, or 2 arguments. So this is a fact that we are going to attempt to exploit in our model. Basically, this says that if you if you lower the complexity of your model and say you can never make 3 attachments, it might be easier to learn this model, even though it can't model everything. The amount it's missing out on is only 3%. And as you see you're going to see from the performance, 3% is something we're willing to lose if it helps us in the aggregate. So the other thing that we looked at on these gold data sets is the type of arguments. So for example, here's cheese. You could say, I eat cheese, the cheese, blue cheese, the blue cheese, and the blue cheese. I can't say I eat cheese blue. Cheese doesn't take an adjective going right. And I can't say I eat quickly cheese. This cheese doesn't take an adverb going left, or swim cheese doesn't take a verb going left. You could say I eat cheese quickly, but then quickly is a argument of eat and not cheese. So in general, we have that cheese is a noun, and it likes maybe some number of determiners of adjectives in the first slot to the left, and then maybe a determiner, and zero or one determiners, and zero or more adjectives is kind of the regular expression for that. Now, unfortunately, if we go back to the dependency model with valency, we see that while it's very good at guessing the number of arguments based on how many arguments it has so far, right? It says p stop given head, direction, and whether we've made an attachment so far. So we know whether this is the first slot that we're filling or the second or higher. But we don't know that information for argument. It's just conditioned on head and direction. So as far as it's concerned, all slots to the left have the exact same distribution. All slots to the right have the exact same distribution. So it's not going to know anything like a noun is more likely to take an adjective in the first slot than the second slot, and the second slot's going to prefer a determiner more often. So here's some, I guess we can kind of see all this. Here's some statistics on a Wall Street Journal, where I've shown the type of the parts of speech that show up for VBD, which is the most frequent verb head in the Wall Street Journal. I'm just going to show it for this and a noun. And my point is that if you can get everything right for VBD and the noun, then you're actually getting a very large percentage of the data right. So this is an important distribution to learn. So what we see is that in the first slot, about 30% of the time, we want a noun. This is a singular noun, proper noun, plural noun, and pronoun. So these types of nouns are very often in the first slot. In the second slot, these probabilities go down. We see a lot more things in others, which are all other tags. And then the next most thing is a coordinating conjunction. So at this point, we're now going to something like a conjoined subject or something like that. And then in the third slot, we have still an even higher shift towards coordinated conjunctions, and that mass seems to mostly come from others. So this is what happens in the actual slots. But let's say you ignore these slots because your model is like DMV, and it doesn't have any way of capturing that. So if you just have all, you get something that looks like this. And you notice that all looks a lot like the first one, because as we've seen in the number of arguments slide, most of them, the most popular attachment is just to have one attachment. So this is what shows up the most, and that's why all looks a lot like it. But the problem is that all is missing all this subtlety of the data. All says, hey, I want a noun all in the first slot, and I want a noun in the second slot, and I want a noun in the third slot. Whereas these actual numbers say that you probably want a noun in the first slot, and then maybe you want a conjunction in the second slot and a conjunction in the third slot, or at least you have a higher tendency to do those. Same type of story when we're making right attachments from VBD, which is this verb. The first slot is going to be a noun. In is a preposition, and to is just the word to. So notice that those are low. But once we get to the second slot, these are now pretty high. So it's now 30% and 20%. And this corresponds to something like, I put the book on the table. On is going to be an IN. And book is going to be an NN. So we're going to put NN first, and then the prepositional phrase, where are we putting this, or something like that. And again, where this shift is not visible when you look at all. Same type of thing with nouns, although it's a little bit different. In the first slot, we're a little more uniform across everything, but in the second slot, there's a 55% chance that we want a determiner. We have a very strong tendency towards that. So this subtlety is missing in all. So now we've got Klein's model, we've got DMV, and we've got these valency effects. We have these new statistics which we've computed, and we're going to use these statistics to motivate changes in our model. So one of the things we've realized is that you don't actually need to be, it may be worth investigating restricting how many attachments you can make. If you say only make two, then you can't model 3% of the data, but on the other hand, your model is a lot simpler. And in unsupervised learning, simpler models are easier to learn. The other thing we've learned is that in some cases, you do want to make things more complicated, and there is some subtlety in these argument slots, which is missing from DMV. So this is our model. It's a context-free grammar. There's a lot of kind of messy notation here, but we're going to walk through it. We have N, which is this maximum valency. So if N is 2, that means we can only make 2 attachments to the left and 2 attachments to the right. It's forbidden to make 3, as opposed to Klein's model, which could really make any number, right? It just keeps going until it generates a stop symbol, but there's no requirement that it generate a stop symbol at any point. But apart from these changes, it's kind of the same idea as Klein's model. We're going to pick the head of the sentence, and then that head is going to generate its left arguments, then it's going to generate its right arguments, and then we're going to expand the arguments according to the same procedure. So we pick the head of the sentence, then this h goes to hk. It says, how many arguments do I want going left? So let's say it says 2. It will then, after that, go from hk to hk minus 1 and an argument. So it's going to generate 2 arguments, and then it ends up at h0. And h0, all it does is says, okay, well, I'm done going left. Now it's time for me to go right. And it's going to do the exact same thing going right. So it says, how many arguments do I want going right? And let's say k equals 1 this time. So now it's going to generate 1 argument to the right, and then it gets down to h0, and it's done. So here's a very simple example. The sentence is, I sneezed, and you'll see why it's so short. So root goes to sneezed with these two arrows. This means it's the head of the sentence. And then sneezed says, how many arguments do I want going left? I want 1. So here's that 1 argument to the left. It's the word I. And then now I don't want any more arguments to the left. So let's expand I. And I says, how many arguments do I want going left? 0. So now it's time for me to go right. And how many arguments do I want to the right? 0. So now it's just the word I. So we've gotten to the word itself. And now we'll expand sneezed. Sneezed is said, I don't want to make any more arguments going left, so it's time to go right. How many arguments do I want going right? 0. And that's sneezed. And of course, here I'm using words, but in the actual thing, it's over part of speech tags. So we also want to see, we've made a bunch of changes from Klein's model, and we want to see which of those changes are having an effect. So now we're going to kind of backtrack. So earlier I said that N was the maximum valency. It's the number of attachments we're allowed to make. Now let's just say it's the maximum valency we can keep track of. So if N equals 3, that means that we have a separate distribution for the first slot, the second slot. But when we get to 3, everything after that, 3 plus, is going to all have the same distribution. So we call this the unrestricted valency grammar. It can make any number of attachments. The big change is that we take right and left attachment. I've just shown right attachment here. So we have hk goes to hk minus 1 to a, and this is for 1 to big N. That's unfortunate, got cut. And we replace this rule with 3 rules. One is pretty much the same rule, hk to hk minus 1, except that now it's from 1 to big to n minus 1. So in other words, except for this last case, these rules are the same. And then for that last case, h of n, it can stay at h of n. So normally it would go to hn minus 1 and a. But it can just stay at that as long as it wants and generate more and more arguments. And when it's done doing that, then it will have to do this thing which I call partial stop. So h of n goes to h of n minus 1. And then at that point, it's going to generate n minus 1 arguments. And then it's going to do whatever it was going to do after that. So in the case of right, it's finished. In the case of left, it's going to go on to make the right arguments. The other change is parameter tying. So in this one, we're taking our model, and it's got these different distributions for each argument slot, and we're going to say, forget that, you have the same distribution for all the slots. So these things in red, these all get mashed together. So h of 1, h of 2, h of 3, h of 4, whatever k is, we ignore k, so it's just h, goes to a, h. And this, the intuition here is that this forces it to have the same distribution across all argument slots, which is what the DMV model does. And apart from that, this is exactly the same. So now we're going to evaluate. The way we evaluate is that we have a dependency. We use our model. We train off all this unsupervised data. And then we have a grammar at the end. And we use that grammar to parse our trees. And then from those trees, we can extract dependencies. And then we want to evaluate those dependencies against gold dependencies, against the true dependencies. And we have two metrics for this. One is undirected accuracy, which is how often did we get a dependency right where the head, the argument, and the direction was right. And then also undirected, which is how often do we just get the head and the argument right, but we might have gotten it backwards. So these are our two metrics. And so here I'm showing the performance of the unrestricted valency grammar and the restricted valency grammar for three different valencies. And what you can see here is that in both cases, valency of 2 seems to be the best. So we have 46, 56, 52, 26, 54, 52. So in both of these cases, valency of 2 seems to be the best. And this is kind of what we expected, since we saw that very little of the mass, if you went from 2 to 3, you could only get 3% better at a significant increased complexity of your model. So it turns out that complexity does make it harder to get good performance. And the other trend that we see here is that restricted valency grammar is better than unrestricted, especially in 1, but in 2, so we're about 2% better here, 1% in the undirected case. And then for 3, we're pretty much tied. This is probably statistically insignificant. But our best performance comes here. To also look at parameter tying, this is what happens if we force all argument slots to have the same distribution. And in the case of 1, the numbers are the same since there's nothing to tie. There was only one slot in the first place, so there's no other slot. But in 2, there are other slots, and you can see that we lose about 5% when we go to parameter tying, and 1% here, and then we also lose some in valency of 3. Again, our best performance comes from the restricted valency grammar with a valency of 2 and no parameter tying. So compared to previous work, this is Klein and Manning 2004, that's DMV, so they get 43.2% directed and 64.5% undirected. And these are over the two baselines. So left branching, we always branch left, and right branching, we always branch right. And then our model, the restricted valency grammar, gets 56% and almost 70% in the undirected case. So this is a pretty big improvement over DMV. This is on Wall Street Journal 10, which is this shortened version of English. So you're probably asking, what about the other languages? And this is something that should work on all languages. And the story is it doesn't totally at this point. We also tested it on Bulgarian, Portuguese, Swedish, and German. And for Swedish, we see very similar performance. So it's well above baseline. It does very well, just like English. For the other three, Bulgarian, Portuguese, and German, it does not do well. It doesn't beat baseline. And we have seen these languages work. We have seen good performance on these languages for DMV and also for Smith and Eisner's work. So we're led to believe at this point that it's a bug in our system, because these types of models certainly should be able to handle all these languages, and they have in the past. So this is ongoing work. Other things that we're doing we're considering using a Bayesian version of the inside-outside algorithm, which would allow us to use priors. And these priors would hopefully be something kind of cross-linguistic trends. For example, that the table on the number of arguments. We want it to push it in that direction. It, everything should have roughly 30% of the mass in the zero slot and so on. These are, you know, just litmus tests to see if it's learning things in the right direction. So if there's some trends which are true statistically across languages, we'd like to find a way to put them into priors and use that to steer this in the right direction. Also, lexicalization. So we're just dealing with part of speech tags, and words themselves could offer quite a bit of benefit. Supervised parsing has shown a great amount of improvement from using lexicalization. There's no reason it shouldn't happen for unsupervised. I mean, our system can't tell the difference between in English, can't tell the difference between an intransitive verb and a ditransitive verb because the tag set doesn't have this type of information. Whereas if it actually had the words, there's some chance that it could learn that. At least it would be possible. So the main challenge with lexicalization is finding a way to incorporate it in a computationally efficient manner. The system is already fairly expensive computationally to run at this point, and if you change the vocabulary from part of speech tags to words, that's a huge blow up, and it will take a very long time to run. And then finally, we'd like to not be running it on part of speech tags in the first place, because that's not very realistic. So we'd like to learn tagging and syntax in parallel. And this would basically allow us to work on raw text instead of text with tags. Although I should mention that if you don't have a tagger, there is a unsupervised method of coming up with clustering words that gives you a sort of tag, and you can use it as input to the system, and it does okay. It doesn't do as well, but there's some penalty. So what we've done here is we've taken a state-of-the-art system for grammar induction, the DMV, and we've incorporated these new valency effects. We've used these valency effects to guide our development on that, and we've extended it, and we've shown an improvement. And we've also shown this table on the number of across languages, things tend to take the same number of number of arguments taken by a head across languages is fairly constant, and we think this fact is useful in unsupervised dependency grammar induction and possibly other applications in NLP as well. And to our knowledge, we haven't seen anyone publish these types of statistics. So that's it. Thank you. Any questions?
Okay, my question is, don't you think that this grammar induction model is a little bit biased towards languages which prefer word order as the main language means? I mean, the fact that for example, German led to much worse, or to worse results might be caused by the fact that it is language which contains much more inflection compared to English or Swedish, perhaps.
Yeah, so, that is possible. Sorry. There is underlying all this is this context-free grammar, which kind of assumes things happen in the same order. And if you don't have that, then you're going to have more problems in free-order languages, things like that.
Do you think would it be possible to add also endings to your conditional probabilities, or would it be
basic? You mean morphology?
I mean morphological endings.
Yeah, I think that should be possible. I'm not entirely sure how to do it, but that was one of the things I looked at when I started this project, was to try to use morphology in it.
It might be roughly halfway between using just tags and fully lexicalized model.
Yeah. Good question.
Thank you.